You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is the 25th of May, 2023. And as it is Thursday, unfortunately, we do not have Sven Longshanks, but you do have Baffy Raphael Johnson. I can't really do the imitation like I want to with him, but that's as close as we're going to get. For the last week, I've been speaking on air, numerous radio shows, Andy Hitchcock, John Friend at the Barnes Review podcast, Grandpa Dan, and I have just the two of us, his duet, and a whole bunch of other things concerning Sven and his condition. And I've laid out my point of view, and again, I want to thank Grandpa Dan for stepping up and some of the website-based work that needed to be done, since Sven really was, as far as the technical side of things, was a one-man show. Now we have to kind of spread it out, and we're not used to this kind of, this big. It's a big site, and obviously now there has to be a spike in interest in it. So, you can go to some of those shows to get my point of view, but we have to make certain that he's not forgotten. I know there's an initial rush the first week or two, but now it's easy to kind of forget. We're not going to permit that to happen. I was reading E. Michael Jones's book, Barren Metal, which, if you want to know about the history of usury, and the fact that capitalism is institutionalized usury, from the Renaissance to modern day, this came out in 2014, this is the book for you. I've spoken about it at some length. Michael Hoffman does a great job, but this is a 1,500-page history, which, if you're iffy about the issue, this will change your mind. This fills in every blank you've ever had. And he points out, where he talks about John Law, who revolutionized the financial system of early modern Britain and early 18th century, 18th century France. And of course, going to Venice, I mean, he was your typical cosmopolitan banker, but he was also a gambler. The first stock bubbles occurred under his, where he became almost absolute leader of France under the regent, and the Mississippi bubble, the South Sea bubble. This is a first of its kind in a situation where people really didn't know what that kind of thing was. This was all very revolutionary, and it was explicitly revolutionary. But the fact that he and other men involved in creating the economy based on usury rather than labor, the fact that he was a gambler is very important. And that brings me to the topic we'll talk about for the next 25 minutes, and that is gambling. Now, I have to lay out the fact that I was a gambler at one point. I only went with my father when he was around. We lived close to Atlantic City. And then when I started grad school in St. Louis, there was a riverboat right on the Mississippi. And my 22nd birthday, my father took me to the Casino Queen, and I won about $35,000. So if anybody is going to be nice to gambling, it's going to be me. And I was a roulette guy. And, of course, that's pure chance. But there are strategies you can use. So, and, of course, Atlantic City, I got wiped out once or twice. It wasn't even my own money. But then when I got married and had kids, when my father died, I never went back to a casino again, and I never will. But I've noticed something. Here in Pennsylvania, the last year and a half, maybe 2 years, there has been a veritable explosion of sports betting, gambling, in these little casinos and strip malls. It's absolutely explosive, and it's extremely depressing. The U.S. is in the middle of a gambling boom, which really shouldn't surprise anybody. It's not difficult to comprehend. But if you're living in a state where this has been legalized, you know names like, you know, DraftKings and FanDuel, you know, like the back of your hand. They are spending a fortune in saturation advertising, using Kevin Hart for some reason as a celebrity spokesman. They're really cringy ads, and they're bragging about how easy now it is to bet games online and how easy it is to win and the rest of it. But these little casinos, they don't call themselves casinos, of course, are disturbing. Of course, they're not going to be in wealthy areas. They're in relatively poor areas. But I can't believe I have to say this, but there's obviously a connection between this gambling boom and economic depression, and the fact that no one has any faith or any confidence in this economy. Now, it's an obvious statement. Obviously, there's a connection. And I have to admit, some mainstream journalists have criticized this explosion. I'm telling you, despite my... Anyway, we were going to big casinos. My father had the money. You know, I don't, but he did. And it was a harmless pastime. Just, you know, and I won big one time. I even had to fill out IRS forms there, because I won so much. So there are serious mainstream criticisms of this very disturbing trend. And this is a huge, this has just been all of a sudden. So gambling, you know, the stuff that kind of Pete Rose got in trouble for, you know, gambling is de facto legal when it comes to sports betting. It's just not institutional. And up until recently, Nevada was the exception here. And we all know that, you know, the Jewish, especially the Jewish mob, but also the Italian mob secondarily, built and controlled Las Vegas for a long time. But laws like the Professional and Amateur Sports Protection Act, passed under Clinton in 1992, was the final word that banned betting on sports, with the exception of Vegas. And I made the comment several times that the PASPA is the Glass-Steagall of the gambling world. And when that was challenged and overthrown by the Supreme Court, everything started to fall apart. Same thing for the withdrawal of the Glass-Steagall Act. That's very old, removed in 1999. That led to the downfall of what was left of the economy. DraftKings and FanDuel manipulated the system to get around the law. They used the fantasy sports stuff, and that's how they wedged themselves into this huge financial windfall. Now, the fantasy sports, which I, you know, if you're into it, but, you know, it says fantasy in the name. However, they did consist of actual players, their names, their likenesses. And they would have drafts and these fantasy events. But legally speaking, the line between fantasy and reality was very porous. So again, when I say legalized sports betting, I'm talking about the institutionalization of it, that it now is a corporate matter rather than just an informal matter. My father lost $30,000 on Super Bowl III in the 60s. But people did that all the time. It just wasn't, you know, you had bookies and everybody else, whatever. But you have now the explosion of this through companies like DraftKings and FanDuel. And what began to happen is the commissioners and owners of different teams and leagues changed their minds. And this is a point made by The Atlantic, of all places. They finally wrote something that was worthwhile. They found this as a way to regain a drop of viewership, and that really came to fruition in 2020. But The Atlantic points out that in 1991, the NBA Commissioner David Stern testified to Congress that sports betting would be a disaster. 25 years later or so, Adam Silver, odd they have that in common, who is a new commissioner, wrote an article in the New York Times called Legalize and Regulate Sports Betting. Now, you'll see that these guys tend to try to parlay, no pun intended, the drug legalization nonsense and even prohibition in trying to make this very puerile comparison with sports betting. 2020 was a big drop in the sports market. We all know why. You know, when NASCAR was pushing leftist ideology, this is one of the proofs that you need, that ideology is more important than money. Then, of course, it became easy to set up these companies in the third world. Payment restrictions, easy to get around. High profits made these firms very difficult to take on. But the ban, ban removal came from New Jersey. It came from the buffoon Chris Christie, who challenged this in court. And the Supreme Court heard New Jersey's case and overthrew the legal protections in 2018. You already had an industry ready to take advantage. I think about 30 states have legalized this. So of those 30 states, you know what I'm talking about. And 20, probably more than that now, permit gambling by mobile phone. But in reality, this is very difficult to regulate. Sports betting in 2022, in New Jersey, was an $11 billion industry. And that's a rise of $9 billion from 2018. And the simplest way to approach this is that's a huge diversion of money that really is people are struggling to get their hands on, more diversion from actual productive use. But where does this money come from? I mean, Rutgers University estimates that between 15 and 20% of gamblers in the state have a serious gambling problem. Adding yet another layer of irrationality and now, of course, poverty to an economy that's on its last legs. This is a matter of the lower middle class, and sometimes the poor. And I say this because it is no coincidence that there is a sharp rise in these payday loan scam outfits. And we know what the interest rates that they're charging. Vantage Market Research had put together a paper that payday loans market was maybe in 2021 almost $40 billion and will reach near $50 billion by 2028. Now, if you go to these companies' websites, there's a whole bunch of them, Cash Float, Motive Loan, THL Direct, Credit Star, all scams. And Cash Float, right on the website, this is in Britain, they say borrow between 300 and 3,500 pounds over 3 to 9 months. Rates are between 300% APR and a maximum APR of 1,294%. Now, if someone needs a loan under those ruinous terms, I can't imagine them quickly paying this back. And these same rates on all the websites pretty much are the same thing. So these two things are connected. And that's really when you start getting to the point where the so-called free market is irrational and is destroying the society, which they depend on to function. But as I've said a million times before, the short term is the only term right now that the regime understands. Now, like the drug legalizers, they had one slogan that they repeated over and over again. Well, we're going to regulate and tax this. And it always made me smile because that's a way to reassure the boomers. It's a way to reassure the middle classes that, oh, well, this will benefit us too. But the whole notion of an excise or the so-called sin tax is to discourage something's use. But that's clearly not the case here. The whole point of this industry's lobbying is to massively expand the pool of potential customers. Now, prior to this legalization, your typical sports fan, you know, they're not going to master the cumbersome means whereby you can deal with an offshore sports book. They weren't advertising or anything. But they will download the app. being promoted on television by sports stars. I know Wayne Gretzky's done it. Barry Sanders, of all people. They could quickly lose their money with ease. And I know a few people who are into this, a few nut jobs who are into this, and they say that they pay out, especially these are the offshore ones, they pay out when they feel like it. They have to sign a book-length set of conditions that no one, of course, reads that spells out the conditions under which they don't have to pay winners. It's kind of like card counters getting kicked out of casinos, despite the fact that card counting is perfectly legal. My favorite movie, Rain Man, had the same phenomenon. So the result has been an explosion of money that people don't have going into pure desperation, which essentially is what gambling is. The people who are betting are the last people who should be betting anything. Now, I know when I was a roulette player, thank God my father's money many, many years ago, I felt it. You know, if you're having a bad day, the last thing you want to do is leave the table. Because in your mind, you're saying to yourself, no, wait, one more spin. I guarantee you, if I leave this table, my numbers are coming out. And so you realize, well, all I need is one big hit and I could make up my losses. So if I leave now, I'll be depressed, but maybe just a few more spins and I can make up that money. That's the origin, besides the dopamine rush, of course. That's the origin of what we can call it is a chemical addiction, but more importantly, it's a psychological addiction. The explosion of this online as well as, you know, brick and mortar gambling is a disaster. Of all people, Bloomberg laid out a report. I can only get a piece of it online. And if you know Pareto's famous rule, about 70% of the industry's profits come from maybe 7 to 5% of its users. These aren't rich people. The industry runs on gambling addiction or the addiction to dopamine. People really believe the law. They think that something, you know, like each spin of the roulette wheel is independent. Most people can't think in those terms. The real gambler says, no, no, no. If bad numbers have come up the last 10 spins, it's a much better chance that my number will come up on the 11th. That is not true. Each spin is independent. And I used to hear people at the tables talking like that. All the myths that they tell themselves. So, you know, and Bloomberg, of all people, a couple years ago said that about 40,000 children are presently addicted to gambling. Most white males, which should not surprise you. Suicides, the Rutgers study that I mentioned before claims that about 10% of suicides are based on massive gambling debts. And it's interesting, I think it was the Atlantic article that said in 2016, there's a big European gambling firm called Paddy Power. I don't know what that name means or where it came from, but one of its founders is named Stuart Kinney. This was a central name and institution in this industry. He resigned, and he resigned in anger because he couldn't handle the fact that he was involved in an industry that preys on the poor and ignorant. And the British government has recognize the massive debt, suicide, extreme stress that comes from these huge gambling debts, which, you know, as you're gambling, you're not mindful. You're not doing the math in your head necessarily because you're so focused on the game. And that thrill, that intense dopamine injection is one of the things that keeps you coming back. When I mentioned the Pareto rule, it's really the 80-20 rule, which has to do with value added, but it's used in many other aspects of life, that 80% of the value in any organism or institution comes from the top 20% of its labor, the top 20%, that 20% piece of it. And this goes from, you know, organic life to anything else. But it's not that far from how gambling works. And there's a guy, one of the people who's behind a lot of the legalization of drugs is Mark Kleinman. But he does make a good point here where he says that, you know, if you're in the alcohol business, you're in the alcoholism business. Yeah, you could have drink responsibly signs or gamble responsibly. Who cares? You're not even thinking about that at the time. And the same logic applies to any vice, whether or not it's currently fashionable. The people who are driving profits are the hardcore addicts. Again, the Center for Gambling Studies, which is at Rutgers, no surprise, New Jersey, the study I mentioned, Leah Nauer is one of the authors, and she says, but 5% of all sports bettors placed nearly half of all bets and spent nearly 70% of the money. Now, the libertarian argument, which always seems to carry the day, no matter how vapid it is, defending these non-productive, parasitic firms, they try to connect this to the drug war. Well, this kind of control didn't work, and therefore it's not going to work here. It's a completely different story. This is not a very good comparison. They avoid the fact that legalization means institutionalization. And once these firms get going, their whole purpose then is to mine every customer vein they can. The only thing that matters is these unscrupulous people will take advantage of a desperate country to pocket as much money as possible before the whole thing collapses. And like it or not, that is consistent with free market ideology. You know, they could try to reassure the public, but that doesn't change a thing. When you start opening up these sectors, it ends up at maximum capacity at some point. Oh, some people say it used to be casual fun. It's true. But now when they saturate every television market, they're building college university stadiums. They're saturating within stadiums. The point is to turn non-gamblers into casual gamblers, then casual gamblers into regulars, and regulars into fanatics. A massive industry that wants to increase profits, especially preying on desperation, can't be in favor of responsible gambling, given the facts that I've already mentioned. In fact, the guy who resigned, Kenny from Paddy Power, the specific reason he resigned, is that he learned that a safer gaming campaign was eliminated by his senior partners. This was in Australia, because it was too effective. And it was costing them money. They prey on the financial destruction of an already financially destroyed middle class, and of course, using equally predatory payday loans to cover things if absolutely necessary. And this is just getting started. University of Colorado signed a $2 million deal a couple years ago with one of these major firms, and it included a $30 bonus for every new bettor the university could recruit. So it went to its student body. Now, it eventually was eliminated, but it's consistent with how free markets operate. E. Michael Jones makes a brilliant point here, and he says it several times in his book. He says, what is the opposite of labor? The opposite of labor is gambling. And they're not the only school. Louisiana State, TCU, major casinos are financing the building of new stadiums. The Atlantic article says, the speed and intensity with which the gaming industry has swung state governments and public universities illustrate how difficult it will be to trust local legislators to stand up and rigorously regulate the industry. As I've said a trillion times, and I'll say a trillion times more, in late, short-term, postmodern capitalism, you are successful and profits are steady when you can privatize revenues but socialize costs. So the gambling industry makes a fortune, but what happens to the vast majority of gamblers who lose? And they end up losing everything. You know, when I was in Atlantic City, I saw these guys at the ATM machines. They're covered in sweat. Their tie is halfway down their shirt. And they were a pathetic sight. So what happens to those guys? Where do they go? Welfare, bankruptcy court, even hospitalization, crime, drugs, mental hospital, whatever. Well, who pays that? The gambling firms don't pay that. And if a man is desperate enough, and I think most of these people are, yeah, the old style casual bettor is not the issue here. No, it's who they are seeking to recruit. The taxpayer pays for this. If you're in serious financial trouble, massive, especially from the lockdown, inflation and all the rest of it, you will do anything. And this is where both the gambling industry and the payday loan industry come from. And they feed on each other in this demonic hypostatic union. Needless to say, of course, they have their propaganda arms like the Gaming Society. It's an industry finance, like a think tank, better education platform. Better, BETTOR, education platform. Of course, is involved in marketing to women and promising to propel women's sports forward through sports betting. No one cares about women's sports, of course. But if there's money involved, that's a different story. Bet on women is their slogan. Can you think of any? I mean, using this elite finance feminism to protect themselves from criticism is old news. God, DraftKings has already gone through a huge merger. FanDuel was acquired by the same Paddy Power, a European sports betting giant we've been talking about. And as I mentioned, you know, claiming that, well, this is going to be taxed and we're going to put brand new revenues into this. They say this with everything. They say this with drugs, whatever they want to legalize. And in many ways, it's a bribe to the middle classes to gain their support, the boomers, as I mentioned. And it's really considered no further than this. These are media-controlled debates, of course, and it's based on ridiculous simplification. But the claim that these are going to be a new source of tax revenue really begs the question, but it preys on public ignorance, because this is not how governments operate. This isn't how funding decisions are made. The same thing happened with the lottery. When the lottery was involved in financing education, which was their big propaganda, well, other budgetary sources of funding were cut off. The lottery people said this all the time. The new cash coming from the lottery was a replacement for tax money, did not assist tax money. That money was shifted elsewhere. When there's no money in the budget, you have to do things like this. Therefore, it created a worse situation in those bureaucracies than ever before. But by that time, no one's really paying attention, and that debate is forgotten. The whole notion of the lobby, all these lobbies saying, well, we'll tax and regulate it, so don't worry about it, doesn't make any sense, as we've said before. And these institutions have an army of lobbyists and lawyers that can respond to any perceived challenge. New Jersey did what it did because it needed the money desperately. But of course, they were, to say the least, encouraged. No one freely does this. I mean, outside of the handful of casual bettors, new recruits here are doing this because they're desperate, because they need money. It's not an accident that over the last couple of years is when this has exploded. It's not an accident. It didn't happen 20 years ago. It's going on now. The statistics are overwhelming. Wherever big casinos go, destruction follows in its wake. And no one is freely going to bet money they don't have when they're very likely to lose. For the same reason, no one takes on a ruinous loan. So what free markets mean here is taking from the benighted lower classes to enrich the immoral, deceitful, and leftist upper classes. People are entering into these because they're desperate and because they can. Before, you know, you were paid a visit by Jaime or Vito if you ran out of cash. What they do now, I'm not really sure what they do now, but maybe they still use Jaime or Vito. I don't know. But it destroys whatever credit you have. You can't have much credit if you're going to a payday loan place to begin with. The goal is to have a full casino on your phone. Can you imagine a desperate society with the constant temptation of casino gambling on the phone? They're promising you all kinds of things. This is an absolutely destructive industry, and it's the fact that it's growing up here in Pennsylvania in these lower middle class areas, little tiny. They don't call themselves casinos; they call themselves game rooms. I'm not sure what kind of capitalization they have. You get two big winners on the same day. I have the feeling that they're gonna give all kinds of excuses. But the research, I know Thomas Barber of the University of Connecticut talks about the connection of legalized gambling and criminality. We're talking about institutionalized gambling. All kinds of negative social impact. This is beyond debate at this point. The destruction, the culture, and the irrationality. I mean, this is what, you know, speculation is. Speculation is gambling. some people have insider knowledge, of course, and know what they're doing. But most of this are, you know, I mean, most stock is in the hands of the top 5% of wealth holders. But when it gets like it was in early 18th century France, when you had pretty much anybody and everybody wanting to get in on the Mississippi company's stock bubble, not having no idea what a stock bubble is. And these are the people who then are destroyed when the gamble fails in the stock market, bond market. And now this is just a manifestation of that. I mean, betting and this kind of casino capitalism, we call it that for a reason. Gambling problems, of course, are concentrated amongst the most vulnerable, especially the lower middle class white male. I never really thought the lottery was particularly dangerous unless you're buying a million scratch-offs. But this is a very different story. You know, there's a reason that casinos use chips. And I think you know what that reason is. That reason is because chips don't look like money. If you actually had bills in your hand, it would be a very different story. There's a reason that they try to get your mind off of the reality. Gambling does not solve any kind of revenue problems. It's turning lower middle class desperation into utter misery. And betting at the casino idea explodes during periods of social breakdown. Dostoevsky mentioned this in his short novel, The Gambler, which no one reads anymore. The high risk speculation, whether it be on currency or on FanDuel, it's the same mentality, except to the very different people who do it. Gambling is part of a very dismal trend. It's the inevitable result of what the free market does in times of desperation and distrust. It's a diversion. It's a pastime that takes uncertainty and makes it into a game, along with a dopamine rush. It's a way to carry the burden of a dissolute society by turning this instability and unreliability into a game. It can't apply to us. It can't apply to Americans. The best country in the world could never have the same disabilities of what happens when a passion is out of control, especially when it's not your fault, and a passion that enriches others. If you've ever been into a real casino, they're constructed to separate you from reality. They try to eliminate time itself. There's no windows. There's no clocks. It looks exactly the same whether it's 8 in the morning or 8 at night. It's a symptom of American decline. I mean, what are you gambling with? The future solvency of the family or the area. Well, if you don't think the future is really going to be worthwhile anyway, then why not? Gambling is fun because it makes desperation and money problems seem like a game. No different than, you know, quantitative easing and what that means for the gamblers in that realm. Labor and money have no relationship in their mind. But that also means inflation. Massive, unrepayable debt that we have now with rising rates, along with downward pressure on the dollar and zero public confidence, can only mean hyperinflation and collapse. But of course, it can't happen. Can't happen here. Inflation means that wages have been falling for white males for 3 decades, will decrease even further. And in absolute terms, even keeping money in a bank itself is a casino. It's a diversion of very scarce money into parasitic and non-productive areas. I think Americans are very much unaware of the present levels of collapse, of instability. The controlled press is still talking about economic recovery. The average educated American believes in nothing but myths and stories that are really designed to assuage his burdened subconscious, already struggling with cognitive dissonance. Elections are rigged in the same way that bailouts are rigged, and sometimes for the same people for the same reason. This is the future of America. This one big casino where only a tiny handful win. This is America, and this is also the free market. Thank you, everyone, for listening. I will see you next time.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.